Welcome to Painting the Midnight Oil Podcast with your host, Dan Oils.
I love it. Love my new intro. Shout out to my boy Spencer, who hooked it up. Spencer is a fellow Montgomery County graduate. He's doing his thing. He's traveling all over the world, pursuing his own passion, which I have a lot of respect for. Check him out on Instagram, _ Spencer Zachary. And he also has another account that is specific to his voiceovers, Spencer Z Voice. Look him up. He does great work, as you know, as you can hear for yourself. He also just did a spot for New Mexico State University, which ultimately inspired me to include him on my own podcast. I had no idea he did voiceover work until I followed him on his voiceover account. Was blown away. So I'm very pleased, very happy with this new direction, this new sound. I'm still excited from this past weekend. Well, I guess technically it's still the weekend, but I took off yesterday, took off on Friday, because it was the biggest day of my art career. I was invited to participate in a digital gallery in Manhattan on 8th Street. It was a collaboration between Art House NYC and Ideal Glass Studios. It was an incredible time. I'm still just taking it all in, thinking about all day yesterday. I have a lot to share, but I'm not going to share that information today. I'm going to wait until next weekend, most likely. Now, the reason why you have to wait is because, as I've mentioned a few times, you know, I'm trying to get you caught up. So I started this podcast almost a year after I started painting, and I've wanted to share all of this information in chronological order. And there is one more thing that I still have to share with all of you that's very important. And it was completely unexpected. It was a medical diagnosis that I first heard about last summer. So I think it was late July, early August. That really kind of shook me up a little bit. And I want to share that information with you. And the reason why I think it's important to share in this podcast, one, I'm finally ready to talk about it, but also, it is going to impact my art, and I also want to bring it up because it's going to impact you too. It is a diagnosis that a lot of people don't know much about. Most people that have it, actually 90% of people that have it, have no idea that they have it. And so I really want to use this platform to spread awareness about this particular disease, and I also want to share how this disease is going to impact my work, how it's going to impact me, how it's going to impact you. And we are going to work together. We are going to collaborate to do this together so more people understand more about this disease, more people go to the doctor, get some blood work done, and they can be more proactive with their own health and start engaging in more preventative care instead of reactive or reactionary care, which I think is so important, not just with health, but just in life in general. It's so important to kind of beat the curve, so to speak, so you're not always responding. You're getting out in front of it, just being proactive with your life, being aggressive in a very healthy and judicious way. So I guess I need to start with my allergies, which isn't the diagnosis that I'm going to share with you, but it played a big part in learning about this diagnosis. So in January of last year, I started to experience really bad hives, and I just tried to ignore it best I could. I'm used to getting hives. When I was a kid, I used to get them all the time. I had really bad seasonal allergies. I tried to take shots for a period of time when I was a senior and a freshman in college, but I started to become allergic to the serum. So I ended up scratching that. And luckily my body just eventually overcame those allergies. It started to gain some resistance to whatever was causing me to break out. Unfortunately, I'm used to having hives. Now, these particular hives were worse because they would change shape based on the way that I would scratch. So if I scratched the hive would change shape. It would conform to the markings or the motion of the scratch. There's a specific name for that type of hive, and I can't remember off the top of my head. It's a difficult word to say and a difficult word to remember, but if you are in the medical field, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about, or you may have experience with that type of hive. I don't know. But anyways, I just tried to block it out of my memory and just tried to get over it as best I could. One, because I just thought that it was going to go away, or I hoped that it would go away. But I also knew that around that same time, there were two new introductions to my life that were the potential culprits to these hives and to these allergic reactions. And neither one of them I wanted to get rid of. So the very first one that was a potential catalyst for my allergic reactions was our dog. And we love this dog. This dog is the sweetest dog that either my wife or myself have ever owned, ever met. And our dog is a rescue. He was in really poor condition when we adopted him, and he had a lot of things wrong with him. He had scars all over his body, and he is just literally the sweetest dog I've ever been around. And he's very much a part of our family. And he's 70 pounds. We actually had a DNA test on him. He's like 60% pit bull, I think like 20% boxer, 10% treeing coonhound, but just the sweetest dog. And, you know, I at the time, I didn't realize what breed he was. And my brother used to have a boxer, and I used to break out whenever the dog was over. So I didn't like going to his house. I didn't like being around his dog. And so deep down, I had a feeling that it was the dog that was causing these allergic reactions, and I didn't want to lose the dog. None of us did. So I just kind of kept it secret. I just tried to hide the allergic reactions and the hives as much as possible. Now, the second potential culprit was oil painting. Because again, in late January, early February, I started oil painting. And again, there was no way that I was going to stop oil painting. And I had no desire to switch to a different medium. I didn't want to try acrylics. I didn't want to do pastels. I didn't want to do anything else that wasn't oil painting. I just loved it so much. So again, I was just like, look, I'd rather itch, or I'd rather, you know, take some medicine than either give up the dog or stop oil painting altogether. So it just wasn't in the cards. It just wasn't something I was interested in doing. Well, about 6 months go by, and I'm still itching like crazy every single night. And I'm like, you know what? Enough's enough. So I go to this allergist that is highly recommended. There are a lot of people in my wife's side of the family that are very close to the doctor that owns the practice, and they swear by her. So I went in there, and I had some blood work done. Because of my hives, they weren't able to give me like a traditional scratch test where they basically prick you with numerous, you know, dozens of different potential allergens. They couldn't do that because of the way that my body reacts. So I had to get a blood test. Well, the allergist sends my blood work over to my primary physician. And I go in for, I think I went in for like a sleep study because I have suspected sleep apnea at that point. And I'm just, you know, I'm getting to the point now where I'm like, I'm 39 years old. I was 38 at the time. I'm getting older, and I'm like, you know what? I just need to do a better job of checking up on my health. I need to get this resolved if I can, or just look into it. Do I have sleep apnea? You know, like what else can I do so I can get better sleep at night and so my wife doesn't have to, you know, push me over so I'm not snoring and so she can get some sleep at night. So I go in there, and the doctor's looking at my blood work. And he casually mentions to me that I have kidney disease. And that was news to me. Sorry, I'm just logging into my patient portal as we speak. That was news to me. I had no idea that I had kidney disease. So not only did I have kidney disease, but it turns out that I have stage 3A kidney disease. And I'm going to tell you exactly what all that means. Now, when I was looking through my patient portal, and I'll admit that I never looked at my patient portal prior to this conversation, and I really didn't have any reason to. I've always been very healthy. I've always tried to exercise. You know, it's been a little bit different over the last few years with COVID and having two young kids, but for the most part, since I was in maybe 10th grade, I've tried to work out 4 times a week. In some capacity. And I've always tried to eat well. You know, I've been sober for almost 14 years now. So I've lived a very healthy life, and I really haven't had to look through my patient portal, really haven't had to monitor anything. So it was a shock to me that I was diagnosed with 3A kidney disease. So I decided to log in because I was trying to figure out, I was trying to learn these terms, I was trying to figure out what exactly my levels were, and I'm going through my my online profile here, and I'm looking at my medical history. I'm trying to figure out if I was ever given blood work from years ago so I could personally see how my levels have changed. And I'm looking through my file here, and I realized that I was diagnosed with kidney disease on July 5th, 2016. I could not believe that. I could not believe that I was diagnosed over 6 years ago, or it's actually almost 6 years ago to the day when I was reviewing this, when I was reviewing my portal. And it was never brought to my attention, not once. I've been with the same practice since that time. It's, you know, I've had different doctors. I think I've had like 3 total doctors within that same practice. But over the course of that last 6 years, no one ever brought to my attention that I had kidney disease, nor were they following up, nor were they asking questions. I was not getting monitored. I was not getting any regular blood work taken. So this was a complete shock. I went from thinking that I was perfectly healthy to going from that to saying, oh, you have 3A kidney disease, to, oh, you've had kidney disease for the last 6 years and no one's done anything about it. So that was a huge shock to me. So I just want to go over a few things, because if you're like me, I had no idea what kidney disease meant. Like, what does that mean for me? Like, I mean, I don't know about you, but like the worst case scenarios were going through my head. And I was like, well, you know, what's my lifespan? You know, how long am I supposed to live if I've been diagnosed with something like that? I mean, I really had no idea what kidney disease meant, what that entailed. And I barely knew what my kidneys did. All right, so this is from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. And I'm just going to read a few paragraphs from their website because they're obviously a better resource than I am as far as kidney disease is concerned. Now, chronic kidney disease basics. Your kidneys, each just the size of a computer mouse, filter all the blood in your body every 30 minutes. They work hard to remove wastes, toxins, and excess fluid. They also help control blood pressure, stimulate production of red blood cells, keep your bones healthy, and regulate blood chemicals that are essential to life. Kidneys that function properly are critical for maintaining good health. However, more than 1 in 7 American adults are estimated to have chronic kidney disease, also known as CKD. About chronic kidney disease, CKD is a condition in which the kidneys are damaged and cannot filter blood as well as they should. Because of this, excess fluid and waste from blood remain in the body and may cause other health problems, such as heart disease and stroke. Some other health consequences of CKD include anemia or low number of red blood cells, increased occurrence of infections, low calcium levels, high potassium levels, and high phosphorus levels in the blood, loss of appetite or eating less, depression, or lower quality of life. CKD has varying levels of seriousness. It usually gets worse over time through treatment. Though treatment has been shown to slow progression. If left untreated, CKD can progress to kidney failure and early cardiovascular disease. When the kidneys stop working, dialysis or a kidney transplant is needed for survival. Kidney failure treated with dialysis or a kidney transplant is called end-stage renal disease. Not all patients with kidney disease progress to kidney failure. To help prevent CKD and lower the risk for kidney failure, control risk factors for CKD, get tested yearly, make lifestyle changes, take medicine as needed, and see your healthcare team regularly. On that same website, these are some really key numbers that I want to bring to your attention. So, kidney diseases are a leading cause of death in the United States. About 37 million U.S. adults are estimated to have CKD, and most are undiagnosed. 40% of people with severely reduced kidney function, not on dialysis, are not aware of having CKD. In the United States, diabetes and high blood pressure are the leading causes of kidney failure, accounting for 3 out of 4 new cases. And risk factors: diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, family history of CKD, and obesity. Now, one reason why this was so shocking to me and so shocking to my doctor is that I don't have a single risk factor. I don't have diabetes. I don't have high blood pressure. In fact, my blood pressure has always been excellent. I don't remember my numbers off the top of my head, but they're really good. They've always been really good. I don't have heart disease. I don't have a family history of heart disease. I don't have a family history of kidney disease. And I am not obese. I don't have any of the risk factors. I don't have any of the warning signs. Yet, I had kidney disease at the age of 32. So that was a shock. Now, something else that I want to share with you. This, again, is from CDC. More than 1 in 7, that is 15% of U.S. adults, or 37 million people, are estimated to have CKD. Now, even more alarming is that as many as 9 in 10 adults with CKD do not know they have CKD. And about 2 in 5 adults with severe CKD do not know they have CKD. Now, in addition to those risk factors that I just mentioned, CKD, this is also on the website, CKD by age, sex, and race/ethnicity, according to current estimates. So CKD is more common in people aged 65 years or older. For people aged 18 to 44, that's only 6%. So I fall in that 6% category. CKD is slightly more common in women than men. CKD is more common in non-Hispanic black adults, 16%, than in non-Hispanic white adults, 13%, or non-Hispanic Asian adults, 13%. And then about 14% of Hispanic adults have CKD. Okay, so again, I am not one of the at-risk, or I guess demographics that are at higher risk. So it's really a complete mystery as to why I have this. Now, there's just one more thing that I want to add before I get into this story. Anymore. Now, I want to share with you some of my numbers, and I want to go over some of these terms. And I also want to use this to encourage you to get your own BMP. All right, now, a BMP is a basic metabolic panel, and that is essentially what was gathered a few times actually since this. But that just provides a lot of basic information as far as different levels are concerned. And a lot of the information that was gathered was due to, again, this appointment related to my allergies. But I'm going to pull up my medical record so you understand exactly what levels we're talking about. All right, so my BMP, now this was on November 7th. So this is a few months after the results from my allergist came in. And it's important to understand that there are two major levels that you're looking at when you're trying to identify kidney disease. And the first one is creatinine. My creatinine, and let me just back up a second. My creatinine was a 1.69. All right, and an average level is 0.6 to 1.26. That's where you're considered normal. Anything above 1.26 is worrisome. So I'm at a 1.69, or I was at a 1.69 in November. My EGFR is a 53. Okay, now GFR basically is the rate at which your kidneys are processing your blood. And the EGFR and the creatinine, there's a relationship between the two of them. The higher that your creatinine is, the lower your GFR. Okay? Anything below 60 is worrisome. I have a 53. Now, in looking at the stages of kidney disease, just so you know, there are five distinct stages. All right? Stage one means that your GFR is greater than 90%. That's normal or high function. Stage two is when your GFR is between 60 and 89%. That's mildly decreased function. Stage three is the only stage that is broken up into two different categories, stage 3A and stage 3B. I have stage 3A. But stage three as a whole is between 30 and 59% GFR. And what that means is my kidneys are functioning at roughly a 50% efficiency. That's mild to moderately decreased function. Stage four is 15 to 29%, severely decreased function. And stage five is the last stage that you can enter before you need dialysis or before you have complete kidney failure. And that's less than 15%. So it's possible that I will never enter even stage four. But it's possible that at some point I will enter stage five, but I'm not thinking like that. I'm doing everything I can to prevent myself from going into stage four. So in addition to meeting my kidney specialist, before I met with him, and I'll explain what he said here in a second, the first available appointment I was able to secure was with a nutritionist. And it was advised that I don't have to go to a straight renal diet. And I'm not going to get into the details of what that includes, at least right now, because I don't need to follow that, luckily for me. But it was advised that I should only have 3 grams or less of protein per meal. And that was a big change for me, because I've always eaten a lot of protein. It's always been a big part of my diet. So that was something that really granted me some pause. So shortly after that, I think just a few days later, I met with my kidney specialist, and he walks in, really nice guy, and he just looks defeated. He's just like sitting in his chair, he's just looking at me, he's just a real genuine guy. And he goes, you know, you shouldn't be in here. He goes, you know, my patients are 65 years old and older. You're 38. And not only that, but usually by this point in the appointment, I know exactly why you're here. Chances are either A, you have diabetes, or B, you have hypertension, and you don't have either one of those. He's like, normally by this point in the conversation, I know exactly why you're here, and I know how we can start to counter this disease, and I just don't have that information. And one reason why I don't have this information is because I don't know what your primary doctor has been doing for the last 6 years. He's like, there's been no follow-up, there's been no blood work. He's like, I don't have any data. And, you know, that was a really difficult conversation for me to have, because I just, you know, you go to a doctor, you go to a specialist, and you have a lot of faith and you have a lot of trust that they know what to do. And I've learned over the years that's not always the case. You know, they're human beings just like I am and just like you are, and we're capable of making mistakes, we're capable of overlooking things. But he was just at a complete loss. And so I left that first appointment not really knowing much, but knowing that my primary had dropped the ball and that more should have been done over the last 6 years. And, you know, we couldn't change that, so all we had to do was try to correct that. So we tried to schedule multiple appointments with, you know, to generate some more lab work, to generate some more data, so we understood generally where my numbers were falling as far as a trend or a pattern is concerned. Like, are my numbers, is my creatinine, is my GFR, are they trending up or are they trending down? What is the impact of reducing my protein intake and engaging in exercise on a more consistent, regular basis? You know, so in addition to eating less protein, you know, I signed up for a gym membership again, which I dropped because, again, I wake up so early and I have two young kids and it's just difficult to find time. And honestly, it seems to be selfish sometimes if I go to the gym and, like, leave my wife with the kids. But we just said, look, we have to carve out some time. We have to make this a priority. We have to figure this out. Today is March 4th. It's a Saturday. My levels have dropped, and I'm hoping that they can continue to drop. You know, I work out 3 days a week. I eat a lot less protein. I eat a lot of vegetarian meals now, which I didn't used to do. My wife's on board. She cooks most of the meals, and so this is a focus for her too. So it's very much a team effort, and we're just doing the best we can. But kidney disease is one of those things where you do have some control. You have some control over what you eat. You have control over how you move your body, and so that's very empowering, knowing that there is a lot that I can do, and trying to figure out what I have control over and trying to figure out what I don't have control over, not to dwell on the aspect of this that I don't have control over. I can't change the past. I decided to change primary doctors. That was within my control. And I've made a concerted effort to change my diet. And I've made a concerted effort to exercise more. And I'm making an effort to spread awareness. So, what does all this mean for you? Well, there's a lot. You know, the very first thing that I'm going to ask you to do is to get some blood work. You know, go to your primary physician and ask for a BMP. And again, a BMP is a basic metabolic panel. Now, I know this has been a little bit of a potentially dreary episode, so I'm going to share with you a study that is pathetic, but it made me laugh nonetheless. Because, as I mentioned before, you know, as a guy, I know this is stereotypical, but, you know, sometimes us guys, we're not the best about going to the doctor. I know I haven't been. And the only reason why I usually go to the doctor is if there is an absolute emergency. I've gone a few times in the past because my wife has encouraged me to go. If it wasn't for her, I would never go unless I had, like, a broken bone or something just really serious. Now, again, this is from the CDC, and this data is for the United States. It said percent of adults who had a visit with a doctor or other healthcare professional in the past year, it's actually a lot higher than I thought. This is in 2021, 82.3%. I guess that's pretty good. All right, now, I was curious because I was so surprised by that I wanted to research further the percentage of men that go to the doctor. And this is a study from the Cleveland Clinic Survey, newsroom.clevelandclinic.org. This was published on 2019. Now, again, this is like a pretty pathetic finding, but it still made me laugh because I just had to shake my head. So it goes. A new national survey by Cleveland Clinic reveals why a lot of men avoid going to the doctor and why some men hold back on certain issues once they're at the doctor's office. This is so crazy. In an online survey among approximately 1,174 U.S. males 18 years or older, Cleveland Clinic found that 70%, 72% of men would rather do household chores like cleaning the bathroom or mowing the lawn than go to the doctor. This is so pathetic. Even for the men who take their health more seriously, some are holding back. 20% of men admit they have not been completely honest with their doctor before. Let's see. This is a little bit further down. Quote, men tend to be stubborn about a lot of things, with taking care of their health usually near the top of the list, end quote, said Eric Klein, MD, chairman of Cleveland Clinic's Gluckman Urological and Kidney Institute. Quote, our hope with this campaign is that by shedding a little light on what barriers are keeping men from engaging in preventative care, we can then work to motivate them to take their health more seriously. Okay, now this, it gets even worse, guys. And women, you're probably just shaking your head or nodding like, yep, I know. I've been trying to get my husband to go to the doctor. This is so embarrassing, this story, this entire study. Okay, so key survey findings. 77% of men who are married or in a domestic partnership would rather go shopping with their wife or significant other than go to the doctor. That's terrible. Because I know that going shopping is like at the very bottom of the list. So if men are rather go shopping than go to the doctor, that's saying something. I mean, whoever conducted this study has an incredible sense of humor, too. Among the 20% of men who have not been completely honest with their doctor in the past, the top reasons why include they were embarrassed, 46%. They didn't want to hear that they needed to change their diet/lifestyle, 36%. They knew something was wrong but weren't ready to face the diagnosis and or would rather not know if they have any health issues, 37%. Now, this is a telling statistic, and this goes into just a lot of gender roles or gender expectations related to men. And it says, 41% of men were told as children that men don't complain about health issues. And I think that really speaks to a lot of this data. So again, your homework is to get your blood tested, to get a BMP. Talk to your doctor about a basic metabolic panel. Now, I research too, because I know that everyone has different access to medical care. Not everyone has health insurance, and I don't want that to be a deterrent for you to get this done, because this is preventative, and if you get this early enough, it will potentially save you a lot of money and potentially save your life, depending on any future diseases or diagnoses. So I wanted to research how much does a BMP cost if you do not have health insurance. So this is an article from solvehealth.com. It's not the greatest source, not the one that I was hoping to find, but nonetheless, it is written by Michael Barber and medically reviewed by Dr. Rob Rahatch? I don't know. But it's reviewed, medically reviewed by a doctor. So take that for what it's worth. But according to this source, a BMP costs between $8 and $38 without insurance. So, you know, I don't know how accurate this source is, but if that's a general ballpark, even if it's a little bit of a low estimate, that's still relatively reasonable compared to a lot of other medical treatments that are out there for various illnesses or ailments. So I felt like that was pretty reasonable. So your homework is to get a BMP. And it's to tell people about kidney disease, especially if you fit any of those criteria that are at a greater risk. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to go into what else or how else this is impacting not only myself and my art, but how it's going to impact you, because I do want to take this a step further. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Painting the Midnight Oil podcast. Come back soon.